operators in the country, has had an award-winning track record for safety.
It's right for New York because it means cleaner air for my family.
뉴욕에 알맞습니다.
For other ways nuclear power is right for New York, visit the Indian Point Energy Center on the web at rightfornewyork.com. The Indian Point Energy Center.
It's right for New York.
It's 9:05 and time now for WVOX Westchester Traffic with Craig Shankman. Good morning, Craig.
Hey, Bob. Good morning. Thanks. And not too bad as we finish up. Do have a minor accident, Bronx River Parkway North, right before Oak Street. That takes out the left-hand lane. Still a little slow on 287 East, heading into White Plains. Not bad west on 287. 95 is okay. Tap and Z looks good, too. No delays with Metro North. All lines running on time. They are not affected at Grand Central. All lines running well. However, still lots of local closures around Grand Central Station, all due to yesterday's steam pipe explosion. But once again, we are not affected as far as Metro North. All lines in good shape and no problems to and from the city. B-Line bus is also running on time locally around Westchester. As Craig Shankman, Shadow Traffic, 1460 WVOX.
Thanks very much, Greg. We'll see you tomorrow.
You got it. Take care.
It is 9:06. The temperature is 76 degrees under hazy skies here at One Broadcast Forum.
Hello, and welcome to our program, The Advocates, on WVOX AM. My name is Richard Garfunkel, and I am the host of this weekly forum. This program is coming live from New Rochelle, the Queen City, located on Long Island Sound, and it can be heard streaming live on www.vox.com. One can also call directly live on... Okay, very good, by the way. We have a few guests, and we're going to talk about them. One can also call directly to the station at 914-636-1460. By the way, just as a personal note, Bill O'Shaughnessy, whose name is synonymous with WVOX Radio, has always talked about Mario's on Arthur Avenue. My wife, Linda, and I were there with our friends, Dr. Jerry Appel and his wife, Allison. We were treated wonderfully by our hosts, Joseph and Barbara Miliucci, and Vallone, our server. I told Joseph that Bill talks about Mario's, but we were there. Meanwhile, the mission of the Advocates is to bring to the public differing views on current public policy issues. The United States Constitution, ratified in 1789, is a framework of our laws, but public policy is the amplification of that framework. In other words, new laws are always being written, old laws are always being challenged. Eventually, these challenges reach the Supreme Court for constitutional testing, etc. Public policy, therefore, is what we as a nation legally and traditionally follow. Over the years, public policy in the United States has changed or has been modified greatly. As an example, free public education is public policy in the United States. Also, over time, great struggles have ensued over control of the direction of public policy. For example, free trade versus protectionism, slavery versus emancipation, states' rights versus federalism. And here's a new one today we're going to talk certainly about, which is on people's minds, an all-volunteer army and or a draft. Therefore, with that in mind, the topic of discussion today, which is on the minds of many Americans, is whether we should return to a draft army, the problems of transition back to civilian life, and the impact of the GI Bill of Rights. To discuss this critical topic, we have three guests with us, Mr. and Mrs. John Wiener from White Plains, who are in our studios, and Mr. Jim Kurtz, who will join us on the phone from his home in Webster, New York. John Wiener, who was born and raised in Livingston Manor in New York and served honorably in Europe during World War II, was discharged as a captain, is here with his beautiful and brilliant wife, Lynn Lehrman Wiener, who has spent a lifetime as an activist, a reporter, homemaker, mother of three, is the author of the book Sigmund Freud Through Lehrman's Lens, which is being published in English within the month, we believe. Her father, Philip Lehrman, was a well-known psychiatrist and a student and associate, the famous Sigmund Freud. I'm sure everybody remembers his name. She had the pleasure of sitting on the famous Austrian doctor's lap, which makes her pretty unique, I would say. John, who taught for many years at the Edgemont High School, was honored by the state of New York, among many others, for his free book program that raised hundreds of thousands of dollars to assist homeless people. Jim Kurtz a friend of mine for many years from Webster, New York, was raised in Mount Vernon, graduated from the Mount Vernon schools and Syracuse University. By the way, also John Wiener is a Cornellian, graduated Cornell. He volunteered for service in 1967 and served with the 82nd Airborne Division in Vietnam. When he was discharged from the service, Jim had been awarded the Bronze Star among his other decorations. He spent his post-war working career owning a large restaurant in Rochester, and after a hiatus of 15 years, he became quite active with Vietnam veterans' causes, which include outreach activities that included dealing with the transitional problems of returning to civilian life, working in the Southeast Asia, looking for solutions to deal with landmine victims, and counseling centers for veterans. Therefore, with these two veterans of two very different wars, I would like to start by asking John Wiener his opinion on the draft, how it affected him in the days before World War II, and whether he thinks it should be reinstated today. John?
You know, I was drafted in May of 1941. This was 7 months before Pearl Harbor. And when we were drafted for 12 months. That was the idea. What was going on in Europe at the time very often was referred to as a phony war. We weren't as much interested in the war as we should have been. So we were looking forward to getting out in 12 months. And then quite suddenly, in the middle of our term, they extended it to 18 months. And this created a tremendous amount of disturbance among the men. We threatened to go AWOL. We threatened to not show up for work. And then, of course, this was all solved when December 7th came along, 1941, and after that, we were all very happy to serve. By the way, I remember that day very well because I was on KP. I was a buck private. I was on KP and washing pots, if I remember correctly. I like to do that because you can get rid of the pots much more quickly than you could some of the other stuff. And someone came in and kind of dazed way said, the Japs just bombed Pearl Harbor. And I never remember my reaction. My reaction was, where the hell is Pearl Harbor? Then I thought, well, it was probably a mistake by the Air Force. They probably bombed the wrong target or something. We just couldn't believe it, just as we couldn't believe it some 4 years later when they dropped the atom bomb and ended the war. But the draft at that time, and that same Sunday, there were men lined up ready to leave with all packed and ready for the bus to take them to the train station because they were over 27. I think it was 27. And they were about to go home. The colonel said, well, go ahead. You go home, but you'll be back in a couple of weeks. And they were back within 10 days. The draft at that time, after that, of course, there was no objection to it at all. Now, to relate it to what's going on today, it seems to me that a draft is quite necessary. It's a very complex situation. Don't get the idea that I'm pro-Bush or pro-war. I keep referring to it as the Vietnam War, but I understand it's the Iraqi War now. And what I feel about the draft is that we're making no sacrifices at all right now. That is, except the boys in the Army and the family of the boys in the Army. By sticking a sticker on the back of your car to support the troops, you're not supporting the troops. We get all the sugar we want. We're getting all the gas we want. No one is restricting himself on the food he eats. It's ridiculous that we should think that we are making sacrifices for the boys there. The only way to make any sacrifices would be to have a draft. But the main reason for a draft is that our army is decimated. It has to be rebuilt. We have to become the strongest military force the world has ever seen. That's the way to keep the peace. It helped very much for 40 years. We never had an out-and-out war with Soviet Russia. And yet here we're practically being beaten by a bunch of Arabs and insurgents in Iraq.
John, so, let me cut in a little bit we'll give you a little bit breather. You made a great, I think you framed the situation back in 1941 personally. Let me bring in Jim Kurtz, who has a similar view, but from a generation later. Jim, are you there?
Yes, Richard, I am. Hi, thanks to talk with you.
Sure, great. How's everything upstate? Are you getting the weather we're getting?
Well, we're not freezing yet.
Yeah, we're having storms down here. You know, it seems where you don't need rain, you get rain. Where you need rain, you don't. Tell us about your days and how your experience and what happened with your service and how you reflect on it.
Well, if we go back to the late 60s, you know, the draft was in everybody's mind. Going back to the high school years when you and I were in high school together, we looked forward to signing up for the draft because it meant we had a card that said we could drink at 18. That was the good side. After that, when the war became more and more a factor, the draft kind of loomed. It's interesting. The draft and I had an interesting experience because, you know, I lost my hearing in one ear when I was very young. And so until 1966, when they changed all these standards because they just, quite frankly, needed more cannon fodder, I was exempt, so I'm going merrily through college, not thinking much about the military service as being my problem. And all of a sudden, a year before graduation, whammo, it was my problem. I quite frankly, would never have been in the service if I hadn't been facing the draft. But that's what happens. There were college deferments, there were teaching deferments, up in all kinds of ways out of it. Then in 1970, the draft changed to be a lottery, and not simply everybody available, you take your physical, et cetera. The lottery became in for about 3 or 4 years, as I recall. Of course, I was out of the service by then. But for all practical purposes, when the lottery draft began in 1970, it kind of signaled to those of us who had experienced war and experienced what the draft was all about, the inequities of the draft, et cetera, that this war was going to end pretty soon, because now everybody was subject the draft. You couldn't hide behind college. You couldn't hide behind teaching. You were a lottery pick, and your number was low. You were going.
Now, Jim, when John was in the service, not only was there a universal draft and very, very few deferments, there were some deferments, but very small, etc. I know my father-in-law, who had a son blind in one eye, varicose veins, etc. He was drafted at 34. So we know, and sent and was a combat soldier in Europe as an artillery plotter with Patton's Third Army. But tell us about the makeup of your draft army in Vietnam, because you were in country, as they say. Tell us a little bit about that, because we know about the universality of World War II.
Well, the draft, you know, it took all kinds. I had guys who were drafted out of law school in my basic training. By the time I got to Vietnam and I volunteered to be with the 82nd Airborne, which was a very professional unit, remains a very professional unit, there were not many draftees in that particular unit because it was all volunteer and it was the elitist force in the military. So, but a lot of the reasons why people went in was to choose where they would go rather than be drafted. So the draft served two purposes back then. One was to fill the numbers we needed, and also to fill specific areas of military service that needed people who would volunteer then for those ranks. And certainly the draftees ended up more than likely being foot soldiers in the infantry, which was a most unpleasant experience.
Let me ask you a question. The talk is today that during Vietnam, this was a draft basically of the poor. Today, we see this is in our all-volunteer army. It's talked about an economic draft, where people from the small towns in America in the South and the poorer suburbs are forced to turn to this for education. Do you have any impressions on that, Jim?
Well, it was years ago. It was an economic. It was a draft of the poor, and that's why 1970 changed everything. Because now the educated, the affluent, the connected were subject to the lottery, and they couldn't get out of it. Today, it's an economic draft because I think that it's opportunities. It's money for college. It's some training that could be used in civilian life. So, in a sense, we have an economic draft today of sorts, but it's by choice. You know, categorically, I'm in favor of a draft being reinstalled. I think, first of all, Everybody should do some government service. It's a moral issue. You put back in if you've taken out. And I think that's critically important.
Let me bring Lynn Lehrman Wiener in this, because
sure.
She goes back to that period. She knows those days. Give us an idea, Lynn, what your impression was of your contemporaries in the World War II days, and bring us up to date on that.
Well, during the early days of World War II, when it was the bombing of Pearl Harbor, I was just beginning high school, and immediately what happened was there was a movement around the country to organize people into groups to help. I'm not talking about to help the army or to anything specific. There were lots of things that popped up. I remember my mother going 4 days a week. She went to Bundles for Britain and Bundles for Russia. They wrapped bandages. They made quilts. They sewed up pillowcases. They crocheted. They did all kinds of things to send things to Britain and to Russia that they did not have and had no way of getting a hold of.
There's no participation like that today. I can see
no,
that.
No, that's what I was going to pick up on what John said, that the United States is not feeling the brunt of this war in any respect whatsoever. And it's not that we should all feel the brunt, it's that we should all feel an obligation to our boys in service. Bush keeps talking about support the boys in service. That's the way to support the boys in service and the women in service. There were no boys, there were no women at that time. But the idea that everything should just go on as normally in the United States appalls me. And one of the things that I would like to mention also in addition is that we had rationing. And everybody just couldn't get gasoline. Even if you had a car, that car sat sometimes for 4 years in the same place it was because you couldn't get gas for it. My father was a doctor. He was able to get gas. He got a certain ration card, and he was able to get a certain amount of gas. And it all depended on where he had to go, to a hospital to see patients, whatever. We had rationing of foods. Tuesdays and Fridays, as I recall, there was no meat. There was a shortage of butter. There was a shortage of sugar. There were things that you learned to do without that were very much part of all of our lives.
I believe we have a caller, and I want to hear what that caller has to say. Comment on this.
Hello.
Yes.
Yes, it's Mr. Cam from New Rochelle.
Yeah.
And I want to make a few comments. First of all, the general comment that when Blair was going around trying to get people to cooperate with the president and go into Iraq, nobody would do it. And Chirac said that he wouldn't do it because this would result in a civil war. This was 2003. Now, this is the kind of leadership that where people come from a mature culture, where they respect learning, they have wisdom. That's the kind of governance that one gets. And we have ignorant hillbillies who have learned nothing and have gotten into a college that they shouldn't have gotten into, and they got out, we get bad leadership.
Let's talk about the draft. What's your perspective on that? That's the first part of this subject. We're talking about the draft, the GI Bill, and transition. Do you have a thought on the draft today?
Yes, I do. We're the only developed country that doesn't have free education, and plenty of these uneducated folks who really aren't even capable of going to college think they want to, and they're promised benefits by their recruiters that they will get an education if they go into the military. And that's definitely part of their calculation. And if we had done our job in providing free education with high standards, however, they would understand that.
Well, we're not going to have free education in America. Let's talk. The bottom line is, yes, it's true. They are offering bonuses up to $90,000 for reenlisting for active duty servicemen in certain specialties. But I'm curious, what is your opinion on national service in the draft? Congressman Rangel, in his well-received book, And I Haven't Had a Bad Day Since, describes his effort to reintroduce the draft in 2006.
Unfortunately, Mr. Rangel's wrong. This egalitarianism run amok. We have to draft the people who are draftable. It's always the working class. There's no way around that. So the draft is bad. Military values are bad. They're authoritarian and they're anti-democratic.
Okay, I understand your position. Let's move on to maybe I'll give you a little background on this so we have an idea, and I want to bring John Wiener and Jim Kurtz back into this. I want to really get their views on the draft today. Just remember this, that the draft was actually established in 1863, and it was quite unpopular. The draft riots in the United States killed hundreds and hundreds of people, but it was interesting that you could buy for $300, you could buy a replacement. And Theodore Roosevelt and Franklin Roosevelt's fathers bought replacements. And Theodore Roosevelt was never happy about that. I don't know what Franklin Roosevelt thought about it, but Theodore Roosevelt definitively was. Of course, that was Theodore Roosevelt's father, and it was Franklin Roosevelt's grandfather, so it was a little bit different.
Yeah.
Selective service came in World War One. It initially called for all men between 21 and 30 and went up to 18 to 45 by the end of the war. Almost 3 million were drafted.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
John, go ahead.
Yeah, something Jim said reminded me of what happened to me and which happened to many others. Those of you who are going into the Army and thinking you will have a choice of where you're going, beware. Let me tell you about myself, and what I'm saying is typical of probably a couple of million people. I had a background with horses. All my life I was around horses. I played polo at military college. I went to military college for a year. Then I went to Cornell. I was in the horse-drawn field artillery. I took cavalry, horse cavalry, ROTC, at military college. I ran a stable. I was in horse shows. I did jumping and everything else. And when I got in, was drafted, I said, I want to go to the 1st Cavalry. The 1st Cavalry hadn't been motorized yet before Pearl Harbor out in Kansas, and I thought a year in the United States Cavalry would be the greatest thrill of my life, and I certainly had the background. My interviewer said, absolutely, you're a cinch. You'll probably be on your way to Fort Riley, Kansas, in a day or two, and the next thing you know, I was assigned to the 53rd General Hospital as a medic. Now, why did they take a guy who had a horse background, military horse background, and put him in a medical detachment? Because at that time they were still going according to the standards and according to the records of World War I, which had horse-drawn ambulances.
John, we're going to get back to this in a minute, and I think this is fascinating. Of course, we want to cover the GI Bill. We want to talk about transition back to civilian life, but we have to have a short break now, and we'll get back to Jim Kurtz up in Webster, New York, and the Wieners here in wonderful Neurochelle. Thank you.
Be careful. Don't touch that.
Be home by 10.
I'm a mother. It's my nature to protect my daughter, to want what's best for her. So when she told me she wanted to join the Guard, my gut reaction was to worry for her safety.
But I've always trusted my son and supported his decisions.
She explained to me what she'd be doing. She could protect America overseas. Or when there's a flood, tornado, or blizzard.
He'd be helping people.
Getting them out of harm's way. Providing the basics. After hearing that, I realized that's the type of young woman I raised.
So as hard as it was to imagine my son being a soldier, it was harder to imagine his future without the Guard.
The Guard will give her money for college.
The Guard will train her with real-world job skills.
He's become a successful, independent young man, and I'm proud of him.
The Guard is the best opportunity for my daughter.
Your son or daughter can serve your community in the National Guard. Call 1-800-GO-GUARD and ask about the job skills they'll gain.
Sponsored by the New York National Guard, aired by the New York State Broadcasters Association and this station.
From the historic city of New Rochelle, home of Hudson Park, Dudley's Parkview, the Davenport Club, and the Soundshore Medical Center of Westchester, the great and growing hospital for you and yours.
This is Bill O'Shaughnessy with an important word for business owners in our region. These changing times, I think, present a whole new set of problems for proprietors, for owners of independent regional companies. But with all the change, I think, comes new opportunities. And thus, we recommend highly the Alan D. Rosenberg Company. Founded by Alan Rosenberg, he's a wonderful man, as a specialized accounting practice for independent local companies, Alan Rosenberg and Company know the pressures and problems of maintaining and growing a retailer service business in this day and age. With offices in Westchester and in the city, Alan Rosenberg and Company earned their professional spurs for over 30 years now, advising large, very prestigious firms and high net worth individuals, as they're called. And they have a special understanding, thus, of smaller, growing companies, where they are today, I think, unequaled in the field. So if you're satisfied with your present accounting firm and financial advisors, so be it. But if you're looking for a little more brain power from an independent accounting practice where they don't farm it out to a computer, we suggest you call the Alan D. Rosenberg Accounting Firm for a consultation. If you've been feeling it's time your accountant, and I feel like this, spoke your language and was a little more on your wavelength, Alan Rosenberg and Company. The number is 914-722-6901 in the county, or in Manhattan, 212-382-3939. In Westchester, 914-722-6901. Manhattan, 212-382-3939. These guys really know.
This is Larry Gottlieb of Energy. I'd like to invite you and your family to join us for a new monthly radio program, Green on Energy. I think it's a very special opportunity to discuss and explore all aspects of the color green, and exactly what it means in the whole world of energy. For instance, what does green really mean when you're talking about the environment? And speaking of green, where's the smart money being invested in energy these days? And finally, on this new monthly radio show, we'll talk about giving a green light, if you will, to the energy projects and the new energy ideas our quality of life needs.
That's Larry Gottlieb of Energy Corporation. He and other energy experts will be with you the first Wednesday of every month with Green on Energy at 12 noon, right here at 1460 WVOX and worldwide at WVOX.com.
The voice of Westchester, 1460 WVOX.
Hi there, it's Richard Garfunkel. It's great to be back. We just heard Bill O'Shaughnessy doing his ads. What a great familiar voice here at WVOX, live streaming at www.wvox.com. We're talking to John and Lynn Wiener of White Plains, New York. John is went from buck private to captain in the Second World War. We're talking to Jim Kurtz up in Webster, New York, way upstate. I don't even know where that is. He'll tell me. Who was in the 82nd Airborne Division. We're going to get both their opinions on the GI Bill and the transition back to civilian life. I think this is critical. We could talk about this all day. John Wiener's been brilliant. Listening to him, I think we ought to have a show with John Wiener every day talking about World War II and his experiences is so important for people to learn. One of the greatest efforts that America made in the terms of federal government's participation in education was the GI Bill of Rights. It was, its official name was the Servicemen's Readjustment Act of 1944, that is. It was signed into law by President Roosevelt on June 22, 1944, just 16 days after the Allies landed at Normandy, and it provided federal aid to help aid servicemen readjust to civilian life. It focused on hospitalization, purchase of homes and businesses, and especially education. It provided tuition, subsistence, books, supplies, et cetera, et cetera. This piece of legislation is considered the last piece of the New Deal. By the way, we have a call in. Go ahead, please.
Hi, Richard. Can you guess who this is?
I think so, yes.
My name is Linda Garfunkel.
Oh, I know her quite well for 38 years.
Right,
I'm
and
my
I know
fans
Lynn and John
out there.
Almost as long. I just wanted to mention one thing. Interestingly enough, the first commercial break that you had, there was an ad for the National Guard. And I just wanted to, I really had two questions. One was...
Don't kill our sponsors now, Lynn, please.
Okay. I just wanted to know what John and Jim think of the use of the National Guard in the war in Iraq. That's number one. And I just wanted to say, coming to New York this morning, if you were out of the zone where the steam pipe burst, you didn't know, it didn't affect you. And I sort of get the feeling, tying into what Lynn said before, that things out of your view don't affect you. So we don't have the Victory Gardens or anything like that. And I'm wondering if at some point you could go back to a little bit of what Lynn was talking about stateside.
Well, I think that's it's a good point, and we should get into the use of the National Guard as almost an impressment of people in the National Guard and Reserves, which didn't happen in Vietnam. Jim
yes.
Kurtz knows that. We're going to get into that. I just want to transit quickly into the GI Bill. But thanks. I think that's an important point. Out of sight, out of mind. Three blocks away, and you're on your way, and you don't know what's going on across town. Very true.
Yeah.
Just
Richard,
let me.
Can I break in for a second?
Go ahead, Jimmy.
Yeah. Just before we move to the other issues, there's something about the draft that it's very important, critical. There's a civilian mentality involved on a day-to-day basis on the ground with the military. It keeps them honest, and if draft. That goes away. Absolute power corrupts and corrupts absolutely. A volunteer is less likely to speak out because it makes them look bad. They made bad choices. Whereas a draftee sees wrongs, he's gonna speak out about it. I gotta believe that this country, for all kinds of reasons, not just national security, but for our future as a nation, needs to reinstitute.
Very good.
I think Jim, you hit on something that was even much more critical than what we've been talking about. And that's Truman said, it was a very important quote by Truman when they asked him about the idea of a volunteer army, a draft army. He said, when you have a volunteer army, the president has a tendency to use it as his own personal force because they're there to be used. When you have a volunteer army, you have to answer to mothers, fathers, sisters, daughters, children, because you've taken these free citizens and you've impressed them into the army yeah. involuntarily. That's exactly what you said, Jim.
And as you open the draft up to everybody, You will just like after the Vietnam War in 1970, when the college deferments went away and everybody was subject to the lottery, it was the beginning of the end of a catastrophe. Mm-hmm. This catastrophe we're involved in today would never have gotten to this extent if, in fact, draftees had been there to speak out against it. And mothers had said, I'm not sending my son to this school.
Well, you hit the nail right on the head, because that's why they're not people in the streets. You have 150,000 men rotating constantly back and forth. It's right. about 600,000 men. 150,000 men are rotating three or four times, and their families can't protest. You know why? They're getting paid.
Let me interrupt.
Go ahead, John.
Just on a statement, you mentioned that you're talking about the use of the National Guard. We might say the misuse of the National Guard. They're being used for a purpose that was never intended to them. These guys are serving, as you said, two, three, and even four terms, and that's unconscionable.
Look,
and
we,
for
if
us,
we had an yeah. internal disaster, if we had more yeah. Hurricane Katrina
yeah, look,
issues,
yeah.
we would not have the ability to even do a little bit that we did do.
Yeah.
Let me talk. This is a fascinating area. We all know about it. I want to move into the GI Bill because I know John Wiener had some experience. I'm not sure. I know Jim has some views on this. I just want to mention a little history of this. I think it's a critical thing that helped our country. It certainly brought education to within 7 years after World War II, 8 million vets received educational benefits of that group. Over 2 million went to college, 3 million had school training, and many millions had on-the-job training. In other words, by 1951, the total cost was $14 billion. I think it was one of the greatest investments we made as a country.
Absolutely. It provided a middle class,
right.
which didn't quite exist before that.
No question. Low interest loans, zero down payments for houses for returning servicemen. The Vietnam era used the GI Bill of education benefits 72%. Much more than World War II. World War II was 51% of the benefits we'd use. Korea was 43%. The Vietnam era cost higher education was about $39 billion, which was 2.5 times the cost of World War II benefits when adjusted for inflation. So Interestingly enough, we were just talking about this off the air, that by 1952, tuition was paid directly to the colleges, but they changed it because the colleges were gouging the government. Then the benefits went directly to the recipients. I have a call on this. I'd like to hear from our audience. What's your view on this?
Oh, you talking to me?
Yes. Go ahead. Tell us your name.
Washington.
What? Pardon me?
It's Lou Pearlman in Washington.
Lou Pearlman. Go ahead, Lou Pearlman. Yes.
Richard, I know you want to transition to the GI Bill and other things, but I did have a comment about the draft and also a question for Lynn after that. I was watching late last night on TV Louis Milestone's 1945 film, A Walk in the Sun, about Battle for Salerno. And what really struck me was that there's almost no technology that this platoon has. They even lose their binoculars to a bullet. They don't know what's going on around them. They don't have radios. It was very basic warfare. Today, we have people in combat in Iraq and elsewhere who are using robots to disarm bombs, who have hand-launched, remotely piloted drones to take video pictures over the horizon and see what's going on. The degree of technical requirements of being a combat soldier today are just much, much greater, and that's why I think the military keeps saying that they don't really want a draft because it doesn't give them the ability to select the kinds of talent and to provide the extent of training over a long period of time or retain people that they feel that they need to operate in this environment. So I just wanted to make that. I'd be interested in Jimmy's comments about that. But then getting to this issue you raised about the transition back to civilian life, it's becoming increasingly clear that the million-plus people who have served in combat in the last 5 years have a tremendous degree of problems with post-traumatic stress that previously was not well understood. But as the military has put more effort into the science of understanding the causes of these problems and how to treat them, it's clear that we've underinvested, and we're going to have veterans of this war who for many, many years are going to need intensive psychological care that we haven't really planned for or experienced before. I'd be interested to know what Lynn thinks about that.
I'm going to let Lynn answer that in 2 seconds because Lynn certainly has remarkable views on all this and is well-schooled on all these issues. That's one thing. Everybody who knows her knows that. But I want to mention something because you brought up an excellent point. Interestingly enough, as you talk about the more technical army, this is a story that was in the Times Herald on April 28, 2007, that the West Point class of 2001 has an attrition rate of 46% after 5 years. Now, you're talking about technical education. Its graduating class of 903, that means they lost almost half the class, the highest rate in 3 decades. As all of you know out there, or maybe you don't, the cost of educating a West Point cadet is estimated over the 4 years to cost between $1 and $2 million. When my son was interested in Annapolis, it was $1 million back in 1994. So it's probably closer to $1.5 to $2 million. Therefore, in round figures, the cost of the American people was between $415 and $600 million for that class that has resigned. To me, that is even more alarming. So the point is that you're talking about a technically educated army. And the point is that, yes, they don't want draftees because of the transition and in and out. You're 100% correct. You make an excellent point. But what about the cadres of leadership that is eroding at an incredible rate? Lynn, go ahead and answer Lou Pearlman on what his thoughts are.
Well, I'm not sure that I can really answer the question except that the psychological stress, obviously, is never openly discussed too much. Many of the guys who came back from Vietnam, many, and whether they were drafted or whether they had signed to go in, like a cousin of mine did, they saw such horror. They were made to do things that American Army, I think, before had not been asked to do, to kill civilians, to slaughter children. They never got over it. And the psychological damage was so thorough that many of them still suffer. And we know a young man who is not young today, but he, when he came back, he suffered, and he suffered his whole life for the things that he had to do under orders and the things that he had to do because it might save his own life.
Jim, come in a bit on this, on the transition. I think you, because Lynn brought this up about Vietnam. Tell us some about the transition. Maybe we can mix in. I know time is short. It's tough to talk all about everything. And in fact, do we need a break? We need a little break. After the break, Jim, I'd like you to talk about the transition. Maybe we can mix in some of the GI Bill. Okay, please. Thank you.
WVOX wins again. Whitney Radio's Westchester Community Station has again been honored by the New York State Broadcasters Association for outstanding news coverage. ABC's Barbara Walters presented WVOX with this year's Outstanding News Award for our coverage of the spring floods in Westchester.
Howard Parkway was 5+ feet of water.
Then the firemen came about 5 o'clock and said it's a mandatory evacuation because it was so high.
Senator, are you confident that we'll get the disaster declaration?
Oh, I believe we will.
The prestigious New York State Broadcasters Award will be added to our public service and editorial awards consistently won over the last 40 years.
We are working with our county and state and federal officials to try to have this area declared a federal disaster area.
When did the water peak, yesterday or today?
But it peaked at around 10 when the high tide came in.
The Wall Street Journal got it right. WVOX is America's quintessential community stations. Close to home, close to you. Right here on 1460 and worldwide at WVOX.com.
How much control do you have over your lawnmower blade? Can you command it to stop whenever you briefly step away from your mower to clear your mowing path without shutting off the engine? Well, probably not, unless you had the Toro Recycler lawnmower with Toro's ingenious Blade Overdrive System, or for short, the BOS. The Blade Overdrive System on Recycler model 20047 at $429. It's the lowest BOS model on the market, and you can see it at Mario Bulfamonte & Sons, 75 Portman Road, New Rochelle. Call them 914-636-4428. The Toro Blade Overdrive System. Toro. Count on it.
In recent years, thousands of New York area companies that were, shall we say, a little behind the technology curve. Now, mind you, I'm not suggesting they were completely computer illiterate, but I think you get the idea. Anyway, they've now discovered Savvy Networks. This unique Westchester company pioneered in computer knowledge and technology 22 years ago. And today, Savvy Networks enjoys, I can tell you, a national reputation in healthcare, legal, and other professions as the leader in paper information privacy. Now, what that means is, simply put, Savvy Networks is the premier service provider helping companies preserve information assets and valuable intellectual capital. Savvy Networks protects your business contacts and those unique relationships you've built up over many years. They're priceless to you. Also, your essential accounting files. This amazing company, founded in Westchester, as I said, 22 years ago by Christopher Fury, is now firmly established as the preeminent off-site backup for critical data files, sometimes called in the jargon a vault. Others look to Savvy as a safe deposit box, if you will, for critical information. I'll give you just one example. Savvy now stores and secures the confidential medical records of some 30 million Americans. It's an internet vault or safe deposit box for your most critical information, and that's what they're all about. So to protect your assets, call Chris Fury, president of Savvy Networks. His number in Westchester is 914-345-0373. For a confidential analysis of your own information assets so important to you, call Chris at 914-345-0373.
Now, there are two in Westchester. Buffalo Wild Wings, two great new family-friendly restaurants for you and yours. It's like eating with your entire family
in an ESPN control room. Both Buffalo Wild Wings have great food with the best wings, wraps, salads, and burgers around. Dine with your friends and family surrounded by more than 50 high-tech TV sets. Sportsmen and their ladies and sportswomen and their guys will enjoy golf, basketball, football, and soccer at Buffalo Wild Wings. All this plus great food in a family-friendly sports environment. There's a Buffalo Wild Wings Grill and Bar in New Rock City with easy parking in the New Rochelle Municipal Garage. And visit the Buffalo Wild Wings in downtown Portchester in the newly developed waterfront section at Westchester and Main, just one block from the train station in the same building as Lowe's Theaters. You're lucky in Westchester with two exciting Buffalo Wild Wings, now in New Rochelle and Portchester. Check out BuffaloWildWings.com. Buffalo Wild Wings. You have to be here.
The voice of Westchester, 1460 WVOX.
Hi there again. Richard Garfunkel calling from the Queen City, New Rochelle, WVOX, live streaming on your computer, www.wvox. I think there's another call in coming through. Let's hear what he has to say or she has to say. Go ahead.
Good morning. I would like to ask you a question about the recruiting of the volunteers. I heard, now I don't know if it's so or not so, you tell me. In order to get the people to recruit in there, the one who gets each one to go in is given $10,000. Is that true or not?
I can't answer that. I know there are bonuses for re-upping from $40,000 to $90,000, and yes, there are incentives. We have the same thing in businesses in this country. If you bring a person to a law firm or an insurance company, you get it.
Well, I don't equate the business with the service.
Well, it's a business.
As you do.
Well, ma'am, what's your name, by the way, and where are you from?
I am from Westchester. I'm called Nudge, and don't ask
okay.
me my real name.
No, that's all right. If you're a Nudge, that's okay.
Yeah,
that's
I
what
am
we
a
need.
Nudge.
All right. All I can tell you, Nudge, is this, and you've nudged us well on this.
Excuse me. Let me break in on that. Recruiters, even if they're not given big bonuses, their fear is they have a quota. If they don't meet the quota, they lose the job, and they're liable to be sent to the front. So
In other words, the person who is being recruited, he is being subjected to a bribery to go into the service.
Well, that's an unpleasant word.
It is unpleasant, okay. but it is so.
Let me get. We've
got these young people don't really know whether they're coming or going.
I know. No,
and
just
when they're told that you're going to get so much money and all, they don't stop and think of the consequences.
No, we've got
to. The services. If you want to volunteer, you volunteer because you want to go in.
Yeah. Well,
not that you're induced to go in.
We can't. Nudge, you're an idealist. We have another call. Let's put this other call on too. Go ahead.
Hello.
Yeah.
Hi, I just want to mention something about...
Where are you from and what's your name?
My name is Woody. I'm from Queens.
Okay.
I just want to mention something about the draft.
Yeah.
I heard that the generals don't like the draft because the draftees don't want to be there. They prefer enlistees.
Yeah, well, we understand that. The point is, does it serve our democracy to have part of the draft as public service?
That's a false statement. I mean, the morale of an outfit doesn't matter whether you're drafted or volunteered.
In time of war, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Like Second World War, sure. But this isn't a declared war. Neither one of them was, except the Second World War.
Well, remember something. That's apropos of nothing. The point is this, if you're getting killed, you're getting killed, whether it's declared or not. The bottom line is that are we overusing our National Guard reserves? Is it an economic draft? Are we not giving the respite time to our troops? In other words,
I'm for the draft.
Okay, and
I'm for the draft because I think everybody should serve.
Let me get back. I thank you for the call. Let me get back to a couple of our guests, and I want to move. I know we don't have a lot of time. I want to talk about the transition. Jim Kurtz, come in. We've got a few minutes. Tell us about the transition. Tell us a little bit about the GI Bill. Give us about a minute, and we can share it around. Okay, Jim?
Okay. Well, the transition for everybody was different back then because we all had different experiences. I know that when I came back, I wouldn't talk about Vietnam with anybody. I was very angry. And first of all, you didn't want to talk about it to someone who had not been there because they wouldn't understand, and you didn't want to burden a fellow Vietnam veteran because you know that they were dealing with their own stuff. So you bury it. I buried it for years and became a pretty miserable guy. I focused just on work and closed a lot of things out. But, with time and healing, you get better. I'd seen terrible things of, not so much military terrible things, but I saw corruption, I saw cover-ups, I saw incompetence. I saw, you know, we were brought up to believe in authority, and I found out of most of my authority that I had seen were a bunch of buffoons who were just covering their own hind end to make them look better. And this was morally very, very difficult for me to deal with. Today, the guys face, I think, different problems today. The VA system is chronically never been ready for the transition back by returning service people. That's true, I think, certainly of Vietnam. It's certainly true today. We have new issues today that nobody ever even thought of. There's 16,000 women, with single-mothered women, in a combat environment who are coming home with their problems, coming home to kids who has been without their mother, their single parent. And these are issues that the GI Bill or the VA, no one has even considered. So, you know, once again, we rush into things and we don't consider what to do about the problems that they create.
Jim, that's another outstanding point you brought up. I don't think anybody's thought about that. John, just give us an idea, a small quick vignette. We have about 2 minutes about how your transition was, and I know the GI Bill, we're not going to get to that. Okay.
To get into the after World War II was quite different. We got out of the war. A lot of us, I had already finished college. A lot of us went back to school. We had the GI Bill. We went back to work. We got married. And we were the great generation. But there were plenty of residue from the war to contend with, but we were able to contend with it a lot better than the boys from Korea and, of course, a lot better than the boys from Vietnam. But the GI Bill was one of the great contributions, as Richard pointed out. I remember one guy that I taught with who came from West Virginia. His family had been coal miners. None of them had ever gone to college, and very few had graduated high school. He was an infantryman, carried a bazooka, got a $1 million wound, which was he got a piece of shrapnel on his heel, which managed to keep him out of the combat for several months. By that time, the war was over. And when he got out, he said, "What the hell is this GI Bill?" And somebody said, "Well, you can go to college." Well, he didn't think much of it. He decided to sign up, discovered that he loved going to class, loved the school, ended up as a master's in English and taught English in the Edgemont High School for about 30 years. Just one case.
Yeah, that this is an unbelievable subject. Next time around, we're going to try to work on the GI Bill. I think it's been one of the great benefits to this country and certainly the post-war era. I want to thank my guests, John Wiener, Lynn Wiener from White Plains, New York, lived there many years, Jim Kurtz, originally from Mount Vernon, my hometown, went to A.B. Davis High School, now up in upstate New York for many, many years. I think his insights on Vietnam and John's insights reflective of World War II have been priceless. More people have to learn about what the story is. I think, Jim, your perspectives on people coming home today facing situations that no one faced today are so true. These are subjects that the media doesn't seem to focus on. Here on The Advocates, we try to bring out people who have strong views, have great experiences, have something to impart to the public. So again, next week I hope to have on Jonathan Alter speaking about his book, The Defining Moment, that hasn't been completely set in stone, but if it happens, I'll be very happy. Again, great to speak, great to have the time here on WVOX, and I want to thank my guests.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you, Richard. Thank you.